I'm sitting in my room, and my mom and dad came in. They pulled up a chair and they sat down. They go, "Johnny, we need to talk to you." I go, "Okay, what's the matter?" They go, "Me and your mom have been noticing lately that you've been having a lot of problems. You've been going off for no reason, and we're afraid you're going to hurt somebody. We're afraid you're going to hurt yourself. So we decided that it would be in your best interest if we put you somewhere where you could get the help that you need." And I go, "Wait, what are you talking about? We decided. My best interest? How can you know what my best interest is? How can you say what my best interest is? What are you trying to say? I'm crazy? When I went to your schools, I went to your churches, I went to your institutional podcasting facilities. So how can you say I'm crazy? Let's listen to another episode of The Last Knock."
Oh, taking over Venice, California. It's good old Johnny Numb. Holy shit, that was awesome.
Johnny's suicidal tendencies numb tonight.
Damn straight. And oh, that's awesome. They're opening for freaking Misfits, man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, down in I forget what they call it, man. Dude, we used to call it the New Jersey Arts Center, but yeah, oh, that's awesome.
Nice.
All right, cool.
Okay.
And that's our
All right.
show. That's it. That's all we needed to do.
Yeah, credit where it's due. That was institutionalized, a chunk of that song by Suicidal Tendencies.
Mike Muir and Company, baby.
Yeah, and who is this? Who is this in his suicidal uniform tonight joining me?
Billy Crash. Because I crashed into a wall in a straitjacket. Let me out, bitches! Let me out! I'm not an animal!
I'm a free man. No, I got that wrong. That was the elephant
Yeah, who
man.
cares?
Okay.
Nobody gives a shit. Oh,
And
man.
in yeah, and in any case, tonight we are talking about Steven Soderbergh's 2018 film Unsane. Da da da.
Something like that.
And as we are apt to do, we're gonna. Yeah, it's one of those movies that's in theaters right now. So, just a high-level overview of the plot. It's about a woman, Sawyer Valentini, played by Claire Foy. She's a young professional, seems to have a good job, but she is haunted by something from her past.
Aren't we all?
And through a series of unfortunate, yeah, and through a series of unfortunate events, she finds herself. Hey, what was the song? Institutionalized at this very foreboding mental health facility, mental hospital, basically. And the things that proceed from her stay there. A majority of the film is spent inside this hospital, and questions of what is real, what is not, subjectivity of the character, all of these things come into play over the course of the film. And I'm guessing, Bill, we're going to try and keep it as spoiler-free as possible.
Yeah, well, I mean, once you know, like from the trailer and the description, everything else that, she's being institutionalized, I don't think there's anything. Yeah, I could do this spoiler free, I think.
Or we can just roll with it.
Yeah, whatever. What do you care?
Well, Bill, maybe the reason I was so motivated to see this movie. I was planning on seeing it anyway, but you texted me after you'd seen it, and I was like, okay, this is a sign that I should go check it out, even though I got the feeling you weren't all that impressed with it.
Maybe.
Okay, well let's back up a bit.
Being a difficult patient,
But
Johnny.
you are, Bill. Jeez, you're more difficult than fucking Rorschach, so.
Not here with you, Johnny. You're in here with me.
I'm thinking, good God above, that this is only Skype, Bill, and I can get out whenever I want to.
You bastard. I don't
Well, let
compromise in
me
the face
back
of
up, Bill.
Armageddon, so just keep that in mind,
Hopefully it doesn't come to that.
That would suck.
it's opinion Armageddon. How did you find out about this? How did you find out about this movie? What was your theatrical experience like? Did you see any trailers beforehand? Blah 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 blah. What was your level of experience with the film before seeing the film?
Well, Johnny, that's actually an excellent question because I hadn't really heard of it, and my housemate, who's a mental health professional. She said, hey, yeah, I know. So it's going to get interesting. She said, hey, I want to go see a movie. It's called Unsane. I'm like, okay. I said, well, tell me about it. I haven't heard of it. And you know, I was doing something. And she said, well, it's directed by Steven Soderbergh. I'm like, we're going, you know, so it's like, it was automatic. Don't tell me. She knows not to tell me anything else. And, I was like, you know, Steven Soderbergh is one of the greatest, modern day, storytellers with film. He doesn't just take like, you know, okay, we're going to shoot this scene, that scene, whatever. He shoots scenes in a particular way that, really help tell the story in greater detail. And, we could talk about that in a little bit. So we went, to a Smattering of Souls. It was only playing at one time. I think it was on a Saturday or so. I forgot when it was, a Friday night, Thursday, whatever. And it's interesting, the couple I sat next to and what they were saying. So I'll bring that to the show as well. It'll be interesting. But yeah, that was mine. So, and plus, you know, I heard, you know, I don't think, you know, the unique element for a lot of people is it was shot on an iPhone, and that's been done before. Sean Baker did it extraordinarily well, exceptionally well, with his film Tangerine from 2015, not a horror, but a film that I gave 4.5 out of 5 stars to, because it's just amazing.
Yeah. You know, Bill, I agree with you. I actually haven't seen much of Steven Soderbergh's filmography, but to your point, just quickly about what you said about how he tells the story with with technology is very interesting, and that's something I actually really liked about Unsane. But I really didn't know much of anything about this movie. I go to the movies semi regularly. I saw the posters for it at the Regal Cinema that I go to.
Right.
And I thought it looks kind of interesting. I saw Steven Soderbergh's name on the poster. I saw this interesting distorted image of a woman and then the mirror image of her beneath it kind of
right.
Looking normal, quote unquote.
Yeah.
So I was like, huh. And then I didn't read any reviews or articles, but I saw some people saying, oh yeah, this is good. Some people were saying, oh, this is bad. A lot of interesting perspectives out there on it, probably a lot stemming from the subject matter. I went to a theater last night, and it was one of those glorious occasions where I paid like about $9 for a ticket, and I bought some concessions because I hadn't had dinner yet. And it's like, okay, that's for less than $20. I had a whole theater to myself to watch this movie.
Nice.
So, you know, I would say I did pretty well, and I love it when that happens personally. It's like the only asshole I got to worry about is me in the theater. So,
oh man, no, that's
but great. Yeah, I sat down in the very front, which was kind of set back a bit. They had, you know, the theater I went to was an AMC, but it's actually. Right. It's like switched hands twice in the 6 years I've been living up here. So, but you know, it was just, you know, at first when I was watching it, I had some doubts and some skepticism about a lot of things. But
that I'm sure
then as it went along, I had an interesting reaction and an interesting experience with it.
Cool.
So. Yeah, so where do you want to go from here, Billy?
Well, before we get anywhere, I want to tell people what Steven Soderbergh's done so they have an idea of his work. he really hit it off in 1989 with Sex, Lies, and Videotape. And then fantastic films in a row. The Limey in 1999, which is an amazing film. Erin Brockovich. Traffic, which is almost epic in the storytelling. He did the remake of Solaris, mm-hmm. and Solaris is one of those movies. No one touched it, and he did, and it was just as distressing as the original, but in a different, maybe a different fashion. He did, you know, the Ocean's 11, okay. 12, and 13, but Contagion in 2011, which I thought was amazing. He did that as well. So, you know, he comes from a really, you know, exceptional film background and filmmaking background, and as a writer, as a director and producer. And so I just couldn't wait to dive in on this because it's like, oh, he's doing a horror? Oh my God, it's going to be awesome. So here I am, you know?
Yeah, and something that I find interesting about him, Bill, and I'm ashamed to say, I've only seen two of his movies amazing.
Actually, shame on you. Oh, you're
three now.
Oh, well, still shame.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd forgotten. I saw The Limey like when it came out on video years ago.
Oh, man.
I
turn stamp.
Baby. And the other one, I know he's good. You tell him I'm coming.
Yes. What a film. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, man.
But the other one I saw was actually like I went to see it a couple years ago on my birthday, which was, I guess, a kind of weird choice, was the movie Side Effects.
Oh, wow.
Which was sort of it was kind of like a dramatic thriller, but it kind of, it took aim at Big Pharma. And I feel like Unsane, there's a weird connection to it because Unsane seems to take aim at like just big insurance, like, you know, HMO and what all that entails kind of.
Yeah, and the film was written by the team of Jonathan Bernstein and James Greer, who are best known for comedy.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Which was really strange. And that was my only caveat going in. You know, they did the Spinex Store, which was Larry the Cable Guy, Health Inspector. You know, it's like, oh, I was like, how did these guys get this gig? And we'll talk about that more. But
Something I found interesting, Bill, was that one of the co-writers, James Greer, he has two novels. Both of them were published by Akasic.
Jesus Christmas.
So, like, talk about some, you know, disparate stuff going on. 2006's Artificial Light and 2010's The Failure. I haven't read either one of them, but...
Okay.
Because we're familiar with that publishing imprint because of, you know, Matthew Stoika and others. So
yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And so that means he's got stuff that's a little bit off. So, okay, I get that now. So that's cool.
Did you think they might be, I don't know, when you saw that, Bill, were you thinking that they might not be up to the task of doing a horror film or a suspense film?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I really did. And but knowing, you know, Steven Soderbergh and the cast, you know, Joshua Leonard, you know, from, you know, the Blair Witch Project, you know, this is like, if you think about it, this is probably his biggest film to date. You know, he's in there with Claire Foy, who's, and, you know, Sarah Stiles, Amy Irving, and of course, Juno Temple, among others. And
yeah,
like, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Juno, holy shit. And, and I was like, oh man, I gotta see this now. So there I was, man, sitting in the theater.
Yeah, Bill. And you know, maybe, something I think I've mentioned on this show before is I sometimes have problems with representations of mental illness. Especially, it doesn't matter if it's an indie or if it's a big budget Hollywood film. I often think to put it into like a narrative context, I don't like it when there's like, oh, there's a revelation or a resolution necessarily to the mental illness. Oh, you're cured after years of being, you know, afflicted by. Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, I hate that sort of thing.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I think it's like that pulling at the Oscar voters' heartstrings kind of crap really turns me off.
This isn't winning any Oscars, Johnny.
No, it's not. But
as I may say boldly.
But I think something I don't know, Bill. I'm actually a bit more interested to hear what your housemate had to say about the film, just maybe in general terms.
Sure. Well, let's put it this way, and this is where my this is in line with my thinking about the film and the final stars that you'll hear for it if it gets any at the end, which is when it was over, the first thing she said, she turned to me and she said, "Psychiatrists are going to be pissed at this movie." And I said, "Good, I'm not a psychiatrist and I'm pissed." It's like, and the woman next to me was quite annoyed and could easily explain why. To me, it was a shame, though, because I was absorbed in the first act. A lot of it was because of, you know, Claire Foy. To me, she was fucking amazing. And and I loved how Steven Soderbergh was filming this, you know. The cinematography was, you know, that's what he took care of as Peter Andrews. You know, it was him doing it. And he also did the editing. I mean, this movie has the shortest credits you will ever see at the end of a film. It was just like gone, you know.
Can I say I love those short credits so much? Yeah.
Miss them. Haven't seen shit like that since like an Italian film from 1975. I mean, it's like, damn, man.
Yeah.
And so he edited and everything else. And the really interesting thing is the movie was very unsettling in the first act. We're following Claire Foy, character, Sawyer Valentini around, and love the name. And, it, a lot of close-ups. A lot of close, tight shots because she's wrapped up in her little world, and that's what Steven Soderbergh is showing us. You know, she's wrapped up in her little world. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I love what he does with a camera. And it was very unsettling, very disturbing. And I was really intrigued, and I was like, okay, where's this going to go? How is this going to be like a Repulsion type movie? You know, something like that.
Yeah.
You had that feeling too.
I mean, there were some of those Polanski vibes going through it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And then she enters this, unknowingly to her, she's like, you know, she ends up in an asylum, and that's when the movie goes from being, ooh, to like, what the hell are they doing? You know?
Well, Bill, what the hell did you think they were doing?
Well, they do a couple of things in there, and I served at service. I was a child care specialist at Mars Home for Youth in Mars, Pennsylvania, 20 years ago, and you know, although that's a vastly different environment, you know, I worked on a sexual abuse prevention unit with 12 boys, mm-hmm. aged 10 to 16, who needed to be sequestered and, you know, monitored like, you know, shadowed like crazy. And the last thing you would do if you have a mental health facility and you have men and women in there, you will not allow them to sleep in the same quarters. That doesn't happen anywhere. Mm. The woman next to me, this older woman, she's like, as soon as that was going on where, you know, she entered this like asylum and this mental health facility and she's going to bed, the woman next to me, when she saw that the guys are still there too, and everybody's sleeping in these beds, no monitors, by the way, no one's like monitoring these people who work there. And she's like, well, that would never happen. And she huffed, and she was out of the whole movie from then on out. And so was I. And mm-hmm. at one point in a film, a character is restrained onto her bed.
Yeah.
And it's not that she's restrained in a separate room. She's in that common sleeping area with men and women around her, totally spread eagle and exposed. That would not happen in a billion years. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? So I'm hoping beyond hope that this works into her mental mess, fucked upness. And, you know, Claire's character, Sawyer, is just like, she's imagining shit that's impossible. But that wasn't the case. And I was like, this is ridiculous. And they kept talking about the administrator there. It was like, oh, we can't, know, people leave better than they come in. We really care about, you know, our people. And no one was caring for them except throwing pills their way. They weren't monitored. They had a facilitator for the group who has his own mental health issues, you know, possibly or not. But he was just the guy who was there as well. It wasn't – they didn't have any – you know, you didn't see any, like, really broad therapy sessions unless, you know, maybe Claire Foy's character, you know, Sawyer, asked for it. And I'm like, what is – this is just so wrong. So it was so far removed from reality that killed it. You know, the woman next to me, she was just like, you know, just watching it like that. And my friend, you know, once in a while, she, you know, certain things that occurred in the movie, she had reactions to emotionally. But for the most part, you know, she was just sitting there because it's like, well, this wouldn't happen. So I can't buy into it. So therefore, it's not going to affect me. You know, and we talked about that with many movies in the past where the story's just so ludicrous. It doesn't have an effect in a positive manner.
Well, you know, Bill, I don't necessarily disagree with where you're coming from. I wasn't sure where the deviations would lie as far as like what would actually happen versus what the movie presented as far as the day-to-day goings on in an asylum. And I did feel like you that was some of this presented in a certain way to give to lead you down a certain trail, like you're going into Sawyer's headspace basically.
Mm-hmm.
Because what's actually happening is how she's viewing things as happening to her, perhaps not necessarily what's actually happening.
Right, exactly.
What you were saying though, mm-hmm. about the head administrator or the head doctor who is just kind of like can't be bothered and you know, very unresponsive to things. Just to play devil's advocate, Bill, do you think that's indicative of maybe some of the poor run mental health institutions in the country, perhaps?
That's fine. And I'm okay with an administrator who's aloof and who just, you know, spews crap like a politician that has no basis in reality. That's fine. But there is no way on fucking in the United States that you're going to have men and women who are suddenly put into a mental health psych ward because they're, you know, possibly suicidal. They're not going to be mixed together. They will have a common area that they could go to, but they're not going to be sleeping. Women are not going to be sleeping next to guys. That's not going to mm-hmm. happen. And that place is going to be monitored and well lit. And it was just like, I couldn't buy into it. It's like these guys didn't do it research, man.
It was a movie mental institution is what you're saying, Bill.
Yes, I am. Hollywood reality versus reality. And the funny thing was, when the movie was over, there was no applause. There was nothing. People just got up and walked out. And so my friend asked me, so what'd you think? I said, this is shit. Like, how could this is so unreal, it has no impact, and it could have been amazing after that first act. Here we go, I'm getting into Stranger Things territory now, you know. Start cursing.
You're getting into Raw territory, Bill. This is going to be like a Raw show.
Oh no, man, did you really like this thing?
Like I said, I had reservations when you texted me. This is another movie like Raw where, okay, yeah, maybe not so likely you're going to get thrown into solitary confinement down in the foreboding basement, you know.
With a wall that apparently is giving out, yet, I don't know. I don't know why they included that shot. With the one part
which,
of the wall,
which shot?
The one part of the wall being pushed in the solitary confinement area. You could see the blue rubber padded wall has moved in like about 5 inches, and you could see a different part of the floor probably from the stage that they had this on, and it's like, oh, come on, man. You know, it's like, I don't know why he let that shot in, especially since Soderbergh was editing. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, maybe that was just like another like jab at the whole institution as a whole, which is presented like with streaks on the walls and cracks in the walls and everything like that. It's just this very, the feel of like a very run down, uncared for place. So I think I didn't notice that little thing, but I think it kind of makes sense, like as a whole in terms of the set design personally. But
why did you like, because I know you like this movie now, so why'd you like it, man? Why'd it work for you?
You know what, Bill? I was really taken with Sawyer's character. Oh. She starts off a bit, you know, she starts off as really, I did not like her for a long stretch, you know, because it's like, you know, she's at the beginning when she has her freedom, you know, she's seen like, it's a really interesting moment where she takes a guy who she's just met back to her apartment, and they start to like get into it a little bit, and she does this thing where she like literally hurdles herself against the wall, like away from the guy.
Yeah. And so that was, like I said, that first act I thought was amazing, and her character was great in regard to like, okay, should I like her, should I fear her, you know, like you know, and I've been with women like that before, but that's a whole nother story. Yeah, she was just really cool at embodying this really wound up, tight character that had some real shit going on in her head, and you didn't know, you didn't know what was real, what wasn't, and that was awesome.
Oh, Bill, what did you? You know, what did you think of her character? I know you said you got ejected from the film because of the factual or procedural inaccuracies of things. But like, can you step back and like say, well, did you feel her character was like qualify as a strong character? Oh, was she weak? Nah. In the end, how did she come off?
I think she's a woman suffering from PTSD and needs a lot of help. But after her experience, I don't think she would trust anybody in mental health. And I think that, that could be that will be a major downfall for her, because, you know, she might hurt herself or somebody else. But she was amazing. Claire Foy just killed it. She crushed it. I thought she was amazing. I was upset that they had invested. It's like they invested all their storytelling into her character and nothing else. Mm-hmm. Because the acting's fantastic throughout. Juno Temple is phenomenal. She's just fantastic.
Oh, yeah, she's great. I apologize, but she is nuts in this film. So, yeah.
Yeah, but you know what's funny? Because I've seen they're calling to take you away, man.
Sawyer's on the phone, Bill.
Send her my love from a distance.
I will.
I don't want her getting too close. But, you know, all the acting in here was solid, you know. I really enjoyed, like, you know, Joshua Leonard was great. But he played a stock psycho character. He played the...
Okay.
You know what I mean? He played the character we've seen before of who's obsessed with somebody and who... And you brought up Terrence Stamp before in the Limey. You know, he did that, what was it, the Butterfly Collector from like, you know, the 60s or something like that. And, you know, I love you. I'm going to capture you. You were going to live in my house. You're going to learn to love me. We've seen those characters ad nauseum. The only one that I thought was extremely unique, well, you have to be unique or not, period, was Bruce Dern's character in Tattoo when he... was obsessed with Maude Adams. He brought such...
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, that was a whole nother level of obsession. That was something extreme and mind-blowing. I saw that as a kid, and I think I never recovered. But, you know, so all the people did their thing in this, but it was like I was felt so bad for them that they were in a movie with a story that wasn't well researched and went off the rails. And it's like, if it had been done well, the impact would have been insane. And it wasn't, because of just the way it came across.
Well, Bill, to your point about Josh Leonard, who I do agree, it was a very nuanced, understated performance. Yeah. Yes, to what you're saying, he is a stock character, but I think the differences in his character and maybe someone from another movie would be the whole sequence where Sawyer is in solitary and he's essentially keeping her prisoner down there.
Right.
And he comes to her over the course of a few days, we're led to believe, and is trying to connect with her, trying to communicate with her. Something that I really loved about those moments was the interactions between Claire Foy and Josh Leonard, because yes. I think she's playing, what I liked was how she was playing his notions of make-believe idealism against him.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, it was like this little sort of, I don't know what you would call it, sort of like this, yeah, kind of this psychological thing going on where she's kind of trying to walk a tightrope to try to like formulate a way out that'll come from manipulating him in certain ways. And I like that. And it didn't come across to me as heavy-handed. I was buying the fact that his character was so deluded and, you know, over the course of years about her that, you know what, he might have seemed one note, but I got this real creepy stalker, true believer kind of vibe from him. And that went a long way for me watching the movie.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. I'm saying, you know, the performance was solid. I love some of the exchange, but it was a character we have seen before. And that I didn't, you know, he was a little creepy and all, but it didn't resonate that much because there wasn't enough of a difference from a lot of those other characters I'd seen before. It's like, oh, here we go, you know, and it just, but that exchange was phenomenal and intense and everything else. But I could tell you this, man, if there's any facility that has a camera go down, I think he said I turned off the camera. Dude, that would, like, no way, man. Like, you, okay, go ahead, turn off that camera. Someone's going to turn it on next shift. Shit's going to be discovered. I mean, that was just like, I'm like, come on. And it could have, it's lazy writing. You know,
okay.
And I know writers were lazy. Did they actually visit a psych ward? Did they actually, like, if you talk to people who've been to psych wards, they'll even tell you, well, where do you live? Okay, here. Well, there's three psych wards. You want to make sure you won't go to this one because you'll get X, Y, and Z. I'm not kidding, man. And they don't play. And they don't. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people who've been in and out of psych wards for, you know, suicide and stuff that I've spoken to, they've all said the same things about, you know, they've told me about the treatment and how it is and how, you know, after a couple of days they get like, okay, I'm going to go home and give it a shot. Or it's like, no, I need more help. And it's just amazing. And that was just, they could have worked around all of that in an intelligent manner. Instead, they took the lazy, dumb way out. And the thing, I could have bought into other things maybe, but once you have people, men and women who are suffering in some mental capacity, sleeping together, it's like, oh, come on. It's like, I can't buy into this shit. And I thought the patients were excellent, though. The people who were, like, reserved and, like, a little messed up, but in ways that weren't over the top. I mean, Juno Temple was fucking great. You know, I loved her. And I've seen kids like that at the youth home, you know? And the other characters who were there in the back, in the shadows. I've seen real life people like them, even when I was in the youth home. And the youth home went from ages, I think it was eight to, like, you know, you're 18, you're out, you know? So it was like within that 10-year span. And I thought they captured a lot of what I had seen and experienced. So I was just disappointed with some of the crazy shit they did.
Well, I do agree with you, Bill, because something my spidey sense, you know, twitches against is the notions of, like, the drooling stuffed animal holding lunatics in the asylum you see in like really bad B movies, like
exactly.
Okay, like Don't Go, like the original Don't Go in the Basement, something like that.
It's all exaggerated insanity, you know, and it's like, and those people wouldn't be there for observation for a couple hours. They'd be somewhere else, you know, that's for sure. And, that was the thing that bothered me, because I really wanted to, I was like, I'm in, man. That first act, the camera work, the character. Should I love her or hate her? Is it in her head or not? Like, because she was always on the verge of exploding. You know, she was just, just going to explode in some sort of either rage or violence or something. And I can't, you know, I can't imagine, you know, how she felt after, like, you know, a shooting day. You know, like, oh man, I need a drink for real. Like, you know, like. But
Well, Bill, can I ask you a question?
No.
You seemed in something I read a brief snippet of a review in Entertainment Weekly of this movie, and they didn't like it either.
Yay.
But yeah, they seem to I think their issue was more that the plot zigged where it should have zagged more or something like that.
Okay.
Do you feel that, because I feel like it's about like at the midpoint of the film, Sawyer has this really like a Soderbergh films it like an acid freak out basically. He does some really effective stuff with like technique and overlays and spinning the camera around in all sorts of really twisted and possible angles. And I feel like that's the turning point of the film, because then you kind of discover that, okay, this is where the story is actually going after that. Now, I was fine with where the story went, because what I was dreading was the high tension or Fight Club, moment, which has been done to death, honestly.
Right.
And maybe I sound weird. Maybe I sound weird because I felt like the movie, because I bought into what it was selling, I felt like I was like, oh, well, I honestly wanted to see, not in a predictable way, but where they went with the story was actually something I feel like we see not as much, because filmmakers are so intent on just like twisting it in every possible direction to the point where, you know, you get exhausted from the twist basically. So that's kind of like where I was like, I like that it saw those characters through to where it saw them
to a point of validation for her and whatnot. I was fine with her and that situation and all. It's just that, I was wondering, like, did Steven Soderbergh have to make this movie? Like, did he read the script and go, wait, guys, with certain things? You know, it's just, that's what I was disappointed in. I was disappointed. Like, he's so wonderful. He's such a great filmmaker. And for him to go, yeah, I want to make this movie, it's like, without reservation, I don't know.
Well, Bill, can I? Okay,
you could ask anything you want, Johnny. Riddle me this.
And it really doesn't have anything to do with the movie itself. So maybe you can offer some insight on this. But there was some talk recently about how how Paramount last year released Mother, the Darren Aronofsky film, which hugely unconventional for such a quote unquote mainstream film. It cost $30 million, and for a movie that whacked out to throw that in 4,000 theaters, that was like pretty much Harry Carey on on Paramount's part, because it's like, well, okay, you're gonna get the weirdos to come out and really like embrace this thing. I mean, other people too, I'm sure, people who love movies. I mean, I didn't like it, but I know a lot of people who did.
Oh, wow. Story of Genesis and other things. Go ahead.
Don't start.
I love it. Go ahead, man.
Tell me about your mother, Bill. I'm just kidding. Then Paramount released Annihilation in February, and that film was kind of also not a very audience friendly picture. It's a wonderful movie.
I still have to see it.
Yeah, you definitely should when it hits video. But people were kind of saying the same thing. Wow, Paramount's taking these, you know, taking risks. It's like these two female-led films they're putting in all these theaters, even though they're not mass appeal movies per se.
Right.
And something I think is interesting about Unsane is that this is very much like something A24 would put out, and yes, not all of A24 stuff gets put in, like, you know, not all of A24 stuff is wide release. Some of that stuff you have to go to the art houses to see.
Yes, indeed.
And that's why I was like, yeah, what do you think about the fact that films like these are somehow getting more leverage in a mainstream arena, you know, alongside the huge Marvel and DC movies? Do you think it's Steven Soderbergh's pool as a person who's worked in indies, but he's also made a lot of money for Warner Brothers and other places because of those bigger budget movies he's done?
I think studios don't give two shits about anything, about what Steven Soderbergh did or anything else. They only care about what the numbers are, what's worked before, blah, 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 blah. So, I don't know why they said, yeah, let's do this. Let's give it a shot. Let's put it in theaters. But this is one of the reasons why I was mad too, because I, you know, thinking about it now, maybe this is one of the reasons I was mad as well. It's like, okay, if studios are going to take chances on smaller films like this, then they have to have a great foundation, which comes from the script, which means writers can't be lazy. They can't take the cheap way. Oh, yeah, the audience won't care. Yeah, we do care, you know. The woman next to me, who was 75, was like, this is ridiculous, you know. And a mental health professional next to me is like, oh, my God, you know. And I'm just like, what the hell? And we weren't the only ones. I mean, there was no applause. People just got up, walked out. No one was even talking about the movie. You know, the best thing was like the popcorn, you know. And I'm like, that's wrong, because when they're putting crap like this out, that it's going to be like, ah, oh, yeah, it didn't work. Well, we got to go Blockbuster again. And that's, you know, and that's sad, because that's going to kill the chance for really quality based small films that can rock. And I think that came out of the success of Three Billboards from last year. I think that had that trickle down effect where it's like, okay, man, you know, it got the Oscar nod, this and that, you know, and I think, you know, people are digging it. I think it, because I know a lot of people went to see Three Billboards when it was re-released, you know, because of the Oscars. So I think stuff like this with a shit story, you know, with so many, you know, problems in it that are just so unreal, it's going to just, you know, not resonate. And it's like, I was talking about Sean Baker's Tangerine. That I would have loved to have seen that on the big screen. That movie was fantastic, had excellent structure, intriguing characters, because he does this, all of his films are pretty much, from the ones I've seen, are all slice of life from like alternative type of people, whether they're porn stars or drag queens or something like that, you know, hustlers on the street. So he creates these really cool stories where it's like, yeah, they're like us, they're like us, meaning like normal people at the end of the day. And he just does it in such a really wonderful fashion. And I was like, man, Tangerine should have been here in place of Unsane. Just because, you know, Unsane was just, had weaknesses in its storytelling. Cheap, lazy, pathetic, Bush League writing. Yeah, this really can't happen. Yeah, but you know what? Ah, whatever. Like, dude, this is why I love people like Gemma Files, the author, the horror author. I think she's absolutely stunning. She creates, she has such great frames of reference. She cares so much. Her books are dense with history and all, because she wants to make sure things are right, but we're also getting a lesson at the same time, and we're learning stuff. And I didn't get that here at all, man, and I wanted to. First act was great. I should have, like, you know, feigned illness and just left after that. Sorry, man.
No, it's okay, Bill. You know, you brought up Sean Baker again, and you know, I have not seen any of his stuff yet. I really want to, based on what you've said about Tan. Well, and I've heard great things about the Florida Project, which was getting a lot of attention earlier this year too, or, you know, back during awards season. You know, something I think is interesting, Bill, is that Soderbergh kind of bounces in and out of genres and in and out of mainstream and indie work. The last high profile thing he did was Logan Lucky last year, which was a huge Hollywood kind of caper film that was like a comedy. So maybe he was just like, I did a Hollywood movie. Now I just want to, maybe he just wanted to kick back with some pulp. And that's kind of how took it. And that's why I was kind of like, you know, it's pulp. And I mean, pulp can be fantastic. Right. And that's kind of like why, you know, that's why I can embrace something like Raw, where maybe there are these inconsistencies, certain inconsistencies in storytelling, narrative, motivation, and stuff like that. But the story story or maybe the character draws me in so much that I'm like, okay, I can look over the little bumps and just, you know, myself over to this.
No, I agree. I mean, I do the same thing for films that I do enjoy, but they have to be little bumps. And I don't think they were little bumps in this one, man. I think they were big hunking boils that needed to be sliced open.
Sliced open with a sharpened spoon, perhaps.
I mean, it's so much of it was fixable. It was like, okay, have her in a room with just the women. And, you know, if you want her to connect with this guy in the mental health facility, she has to wait until it's common hour or, you know, they're out of their rooms. I mean, what's the big deal? And like, okay, if someone's going to be strapped down, they're not going to be strapped down like that in front of people who could freaking attack them, especially when you don't have anybody coming into the room who's a mental health professional to monitor what's going on. I mean, simple fixes could have just gone such a long way. You know, and they didn't.
Well, Bill, you mentioned, I think the point I was getting to with the Sean Baker thing and the filming on digital or filming on a camera, filming on a phone or whatever, was I rewatched Inland Empire last week, and this movie actually reminded me a lot of Inland Empire. And you know what? Okay. I liked the movie better the second time than I did the first time I watched it. So I was like thinking Soderbergh was kind of using some of those Lynchian techniques, but kind of the camera angles where he's like shoving the camera like in Claire Foy's face, the same way Lynch was shoving the camera in Laura Dern's face all through Inland Empire, kind of like there's no room to breathe. It's this very invasive, intrusive kind of filming, and I kind of liked that, and I thought it was applicable here, and I thought it added to the effect for me anyway.
That's great. No, and I could understand how the film. But again, you know, David Lynch with Inland Empire, you know, he created. You knew that this was, like you said, like the tagline says, a woman in trouble. She's in trouble. She's in trouble, and we don't really know what's going on in her head, what's real, what isn't. Of course, you know, people walking around with bunny heads, you know, we have an idea something's not right. But, you know, she had, you know, but we were set up for that. And when you're trying to establish something in reality and say somebody has a problem, yet that reality isn't even close to normalcy, it doesn't work. The foundation isn't there. So it's like the story doesn't hold up. You want to give me weirdness, like 1981's The Possession, and like blow my mind with something that's like, and the reason that movie worked is because everything, they had this normal foundation and everything else was bonkers, off the wall, insane, which only added to the terror, you know, and the disturbing nature of it. So, you know, once you're saying, okay, here's the world in which you live, and now we're going to like really crank it up into like ways that'll blow your mind, it's going to blow our minds. You and I have had the same conversation with Eli Roth's Hostel. It didn't work for us because we just couldn't buy into it. And once we couldn't buy into it, then there was no emotional impact. So it's like, okay, this is so stupid. I know this is a fantasy. So this poor actress who's tied to a chair, who has to like, you know, scream and cry because she's being cut up by some lunatic. I feel bad for her because she's wasting her acting chops, because I could give two shits, because it doesn't hold up. You know what I mean?
No, I know absolutely what you mean, Bill. Because I agree with that. I mean, I think just in this film, for me, Claire Foy was fantastic. I thought she anchored the whole fucking thing. And I thought Josh Leonard was great too. Even though, yeah, like you said, he is playing a stock character, but that diseased relationship that the two of them possess, I was totally on board for that. It felt like I was reading like something out of Hard Case Crime kind of, you know, but yeah, it was, not to take away from your points, which, you know, are valid. And I just, that wasn't what I was looking at. And maybe I should have been, and maybe this is why we did this show.
Why the hell did we do this show? I can't take it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You know, Bill, well, would you have, you know, okay, if the film would have stayed perhaps subjective and just kept, like you were talking about, possession, building up the exaggeration and the craziness over the course of it, do you think the film would have been better rather than a kind of, I guess, what's the phrase, doubling down on the...
Well, I mean, all you had to do was let's take a look at you know, Josh Leonard's character, you know, and he was fantastic. I'm so happy for him. He's awesome. He was perfect. You know, he killed it. But why didn't they like spend some time in making this character just a little bit different than all the other ones we've seen before? And they didn't do that. And that's not Josh's fault. Mm-hmm. It's not Soderbergh's fault. That's how the character was written. And they did their jobs as, you know, director and actor to make that come to life. But it's like, yeah, but we've seen this guy before. Meanwhile, you're presenting this incredibly complex woman, you know, Sawyer Valentini, and, you know, Claire Foy is just killing this role. The character resonates, and it's like, but so like, why'd you give up? Why did you give up on those other characters? You know, that's what I didn't like. It's like they invested all of their heart and soul into one character. And if they had done it, like with Three Billboards, you know, you have characters in there that are complex and multifaceted that you're lucky if you could watch 20 movies in a row and find a complex character, you know. But here we are in that movie, we have all of these amazing characters that you love and hate at the same damn time. And, you know, and you're like invested in that and like going, where the hell is this thing going to go? And I thought it was tremendous. Why are you laughing, man?
I'm not getting into it.
Oh, you hated Three Billboards? Oh my God. Dave Kay is going to drive up from fucking Georgia and kick your ass, man.
You know what? When I saw his rating for that movie, I was like, really? But okay.
Oh my God.
I'm in the minority here, way in the minority with Unsane and Three Billboards. So maybe, Bill, maybe we should wrap the show up.
Nah, man, you're fine. I mean, forget it, man. As a writer, Three Billboards, I was like, shit, man, this is, I got to get deep into character, man. That's what that taught me. So.
I'm not saying that it wasn't that, but I found so much of that film and so much of the characterization contrived that I couldn't. That's a movie that ejected me, Bill. Like Unsane and Raw ejected you from the movie.
Oh man, you know what, Johnny? I think you should call your local asylum. And if they're doing the unisex thing, ask for the room that has Harley Quinn and just, you know, see what happens.
Oh, Mr. J.
Oh, my God.
That's sage advice, Dr. Bill.
So then if we're ending the show, how many stars do you give this Unsane?
You know what, Bill? You're going to hate me. I gave it 4 out of 5.
Oh, my God! I have to rescue you from yourself. I'm calling an intervention.
All right, do what you got to do, Bill. Get down to Harrisburg and save my soul.
I will, my friend. I love you too much.
How about you, Bill? I don't think
because,
I want to know.
Because of the cinematography, because of the acting, I thought that was a solid 2 stars for that. And the music as well. But
You know, I forgot to mention that the music was fantastic.
It was. Yeah. And you know what the funny thing is? I go to IMDb and I'm like, who did the music? There's nobody listed. I think they just pulled stuff that they had rights to and let it rip, man. I don't see anyone with the sound, soundtrack credit. But
whoa, okay.
Yeah, which I was quite surprised by. And yeah, there's nobody there. There's sound. Visually, yeah, there's nobody, nothing there. And, but anyway, yeah, so I give it 2 for the acting, the atmosphere that it created, the cinematography, the cinematographic storytelling was fantastic. But man, the writers took a vacation, and that pisses me off, and I don't know how that got made. I don't know how somebody said, yeah, man, those parts are really awful. Let's shoot it. Like, how the hell? I don't know. It did. So congratulations to Bernstein and Greer for, pulling a fast one. Bastards.
Well, Bill, it beats writing vehicles for Larry the Cable Guy, I suppose.
Oh, gosh. But anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's it. And Claire Foy and Joshua Leonard. I hope they do movies together. I hope they do something else together too. And Claire Foy, man, you know, if this got an Oscar nod for cinematography, people would be who make these $50,000 cameras and shit will be vomiting in the sidewalk. But Claire Foy, man, she got like a little Oscar nod. You know, we'll see how the whole year goes because it's early. But she was just tremendous. Her eyes, man. I think her eyes were probably hurting her because her eyes were just so full of like, the whole time.
Well, and something I liked about her, Bill, is I don't think the way the camera is like always on her, I don't think she was even wearing makeup for most of the film. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, and Juno Temple, man, as Violet. Holy shit. She killed it, man. Best supporting actress nod, that would be fine. And we didn't mention someone who I thought was brilliant in the 3 seconds he was in it. Matt Damon, man, playing a very understated, this is what you need to do to protect yourself, man, role. And he just was, I thought he was a blast, man. I thought it was solid.
You know what, Bill? Like I said, I knew very little about anything about this movie when I went into it, so it was like a total shock when I saw him. I was like, oh, yeah. Surprise cameo there, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, he does those a lot, and when he does them, he just crushes it because he plays like this, holy shit, that's Matt Damon, and he's playing a normal guy. You know, it's like, he just does such a damn good job of it.
Yeah, and he's got that kind of it's like he's doing one of his impersonations from The Talented Mr. Ripley. He's like doing this monotone thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So, all right, cool. So, I think it's time.
I'm sorry you didn't like it, Bill, but maybe you can scream out and
I'm going to scream
the show back around.
Yeah, we mentioned Dave Kay, and that's a Fiend on Film. Phenomenal soul, and he will be on the show soon, and we could fight about that. we won't throw stones or anything, but he'll be on the show soon. And okay, here's the scream outs. These are people you can follow on Twitter, and it is, and I'm just gonna give their twiddle again. I have no water. I'm glad I'm not talking about some other people on here tonight, but
I think you're unsane, Bill.
Save me, somebody. Save me. I think I just need to get laid, but that's a whole other story. People you can follow on Twitter, please do, because they're awesome souls. Susan on the Ledge. She's a writer girl. She's a tequila expert. That says enough right there. You can find her stuff at 1428_Elm. And she's the originator, writer, journalist, critic of movies, television, pop culture. And go to her blogspot.com page, which is I'm Off the Ledge. The fantastic Leon_Fleming. And as he says, we're all just pawns in the game of life and death. And that's it. That's all you need to know. Go check him out. SM_Henley, writer of dark urban fantasy and horror. Yeah. When I'm old and gray and sitting by the fire, I'd still be singing The Cutter like a boss. And I hope he's talking about the Echo and the Bunnymen song. And he's at smhenley.com.
Phil, it's she, not he.
Did I say he?
Oh, yeah, man. You said he.
It's the water. Jeez, man, thanks. Well, this woman, a fantastic horror writer, Latash Figueroa. She's an author with a bent towards the dark side. She's a yogi wannabe, music lover, unafraid of heights, which is good. You can check out her stuff on Instagram at frayed_pages. And also go to her great website, latashafigueroa-author.com. This... I love this guy. He's great. He's ripping into me because of my Stranger Things commentary in a really cool way. Love the man. 12th Night Horror. And if you love horror and horror movies and Halloween, you know, check him out. He also does 12 Days of Movies. And go to 12nightsofhorror.com. Fantastic. Another great soul, Tracy_TR. For Scream Radio, keep that E out, save that for your eeks. She's in a black horror chick, girl power, 24/7, 365, streaming radio dedicated to all things horror and more. Go to Scream Radio at scrmradio.com. Fantastic. She's just really got it going on. She's got such a cool family. She's such a wonderful soul. Zombie WA Shotgun. That's Zombie with a Shotgun. It's the official Twitter account for Zombie with a Shotgun from creator, producer, the great Hilton Ariel Ruiz. Hilton, this is my call. Like, get you out, come on the show, man. Let's do it. He's got the web series, comic, feature film, and it's all about zombies, of course. And go to their excellent website, zombiewithashotgun.com, and check out those comic books because they'll blow your mind. They're awesome. Real Jilly G. We love her. She's Canadian. How can you not love her? She's a woman, writer, poet, Free Will Writer's Asylum. She's into, The Walking Dead. She's a survivor and an advocate. She's part of the women's movement. And she's a great photographer as well. She's out of Toronto, Ontario region. And go to her excellent site, crimsonquintessence.com. Just two more, Johnny. Gray Matter Press. They're publishers of exceptional dark fiction, horror, spec fic, sci-fi, thriller, fantasy, suspense. They support indie authors. They're out of Chicago, Gray Matter Press with an E. So that's where the E from Scream Radio went. And finally, finally, the great people at Daily Dead News. Daily Dead Horror Entertainment News, reviews, interviews, trailers, and editorials. They're out of NYC near me. And check out their excellent site, dailydead.com. So, Johnny, where can people find you, my friend?
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can also find my reviews at loudgreenbird.com. What about you, Billy?
You can find me at Billy Crash on Twitter, and also for this show and wonderful articles coming each week. I'm not talking about wonderful from the ones I write, but from, you know, other great souls such as yourself. CrashPalaceProductions.com. There is a Crash Palace store coming soon for you, I guess. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'll be the only one buying t-shirts with art from our own Johnny Numb, Greg Palko of Palko Designs, and possibly a couple of other people. So that'll be interesting. And listen to this show on iTunes and leave comments, please. We'd love to hear from you, so go right to the website and do that, crashpalaceproductions.com. So, Johnny, I think I'm going...
And
yes?
Well, before we sign off, Bill, I wanted to say we also have something in the works since our five-year anniversary will be coming up in May, and we're getting something together to give back to those who listen to the show and those who peruse CrashPalaceProductions.com. Woo! So stay tuned to Crash Palace Productions for more information on that.
About the last knock, yes. And Johnny, you're awesome, buddy.
You're awesome too.
No, I'm going to ruminate more about Unsane and not change my mind.
You know what, Bill? That 2 stars surprised me. So I'm like, I'm going to take what I can get here. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, really, if that acting at all wasn't there in the cinematography, and the directing, I mean, without those three elements, it would have been much lower. It would have been, you know, zero. It would have been at most one star out of five.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah. All right, man. You have a great one, buddy. Stay out of asylums. All right.
I'll do my best. You too, Bill.
All right, bud. Bye.
Bye.